Visit a farm. Log on to escapemaker.com for more ideas on local weekend getaways and day trips to orchards, farms, wineries, breweries, and more. Get out of the city and explore while also supporting your local farmers. Log on to escapemaker.com now to get inspired and make your escape through the net.
Hi, this is Katie Kiefer from What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you, as always, from the back of Roberta's Pizza here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You, of course, are listening to the Farm Report. I am your host, Erin Fairbanks. And at the top of the show, because I know you're here, you've walked away from that stop button, that fast forward button, and I've got you for a second. I have to send out a quick appeal on behalf of the Heritage Radio Network. We are in the middle of our end of year funding drive, and I am super hopeful that Farm Report listeners like you will consider being part of the drive this year. Really, a gift of any amount helps. It helps keep our lights on. It helps make sure that we are able to bring you free, amazing radio programming every week, 34 shows a week. We are 100% kind of listener supported, and we have some great gifts this year too. So if you're in need of a new set of pot holders or want a swanky new t-shirt to show your HRN pride, check us out. We're at www.heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Whatever you can give would be appreciated. You can click the Farm Report from the scroll down menu, and I would love to hear from you and to know that you donated on behalf of the show. So thank you. Thanks for not pressing the fast forward button. You're awesome. We are going to be chatting today about organic feed supply and some kind of new folks in the industry looking to serve a new kind of class of farmers. We are on the line with Jim Campbell of New Country Organics. Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Ah, so you do not sound, I know that your New Country Organics is based out in Waynesboro, Virginia, but you do not sound like a Virginian, my friend.
No, well, that would be right, Erin. Yes, we're based in Virginia, and I'm actually calling in from our new plant in Lubbock, Texas. But I'm from neither place. I'm from Scotland originally.
So you do have kind of an unconventional background for an organic feed supplier. Why don't you give us the broad strokes about how you came to be at the helm of New Country Organics?
Sure. Well, my personal background was in financial services, and I've spent many years working for various companies, both here and abroad. And really what happened was that something that became a passion and a hobby went on from there to become a very real interest. And a few years ago, myself and two partners bought nearly New Country Organics in Virginia. And we've really taken that to the next stage. And as part of that, I gave up my career and joined the company 2 years ago to try and make the company as good as it could be.
I think there's like something wild to me about like you're like, I'm gonna throw it all away and I'm gonna jump into organic feed supply. I'm like, you just have to help me like understand like where your passion for organic seed arose. Like, how did you get interested in this topic? How did you build expertise? What was the kind of like passion inducing moment where you're like, yes, this is the thing that I want to spend the next chunk of my life working on?
Sure. But what happened was actually in Virginia, we have a small farm, and on the farm we've had horses. And what happened was we thought, gosh, you know, we should really do our own hay. So we began to do that. And I was working full time at this time. But we started doing that, and we got a few chickens. And I really became fascinated, actually, with poultry and the concept of pasture poultry. And so we really use the chickens, you know, in the fields to come after the horses. You know, nature doesn't really farm without animals. if you think about it. And so we created mobile chicken houses and had a few hundred birds at one point, and really we kind of fostered that part of the farm. And having done that, it really gripped me as something which I think was so important for us as a society to think about how we grow our food and so forth. And a good friend of mine actually ended up being one of my partners when we got into New Country Organics. He was running the largest organic farm in Virginia at the time. And so we ended up really trying to turn this into something quite big and make this great organic feed accessible to as many people as possible.
So can you tell us a little bit about, like, what are the types of customers that you serve? Who's kind of calling you up or visiting the website? Are they, like, large-scale producers? Are they backyard farmers? Are they something in between? Like, who are the people that you're kind of seeing as, like, your target market?
Yeah, really, it goes all the way from small artisanal farms, maybe doing farm-to-table organic certification, that kind of thing, all the way down to the backyard people and homesteaders. And I think the unifying thing for all of our customers is the interest and passion for organic. Mm-hmm. And I think especially with the smaller people, it's almost like people are trying to take control of their own personal food chains.
Right.
And so many of our customers, you know, perhaps personally or in their family, they've had a health scare, maybe severe allergies, and what you find is that they've got some chickens, maybe some goats or something like that, and they care greatly what these animals eat because they're living off the dairy or the eggs or whatever. And I think that there's, you know, just growing distrust with big food, if I can put it like that.
Yeah, wanting to bring it, like, back in house. So New Country Organics, you guys are acting as like a grain distributor and retailer, or are there pieces of your operation that you're also kind of growing? Like, what's the relationship between the sourcing of the product and the selling and distributing of the product? Like, where are you kind of in that space?
Well, we buy certified organic grains from the U.S. Mm-hmm. and from Canada, and in fact, only so. We don't buy any foreign grains, and generally our preference is to buy as locally as possible to us, and we believe that has a beneficial impact as well. We take the grains, we create the feed, you know, we mill the grains in certain ways, we add yeast, vitamins, kelp from Iceland, probiotics, and then market the feed really directly to consumers, but also to dealers. And right now we have about 200 dealers up and down the East Coast of the U.S., and we also export. So but people can go online and order direct from us or through a local reseller if one of these dealers might be nearby.
That makes sense. So I think, too, when people think about feeding like different grain and grain mixes to animals, there's this idea that you're like, oh, well, you just like have the grain or you have the seeds and like that's what it is. But it's interesting when you're looking at kind of nutrition for poultry or for livestock, it very quickly becomes a quite complex business where folks are looking at carbohydrate ratios, fat ratios, kind of different like trace and micronutrients. And how did you guys come up with like it to me, I feel like a nice way to think about it is like you're putting together like a lovely like bowl of cereal for, you know, where you're like, okay, it's got to be like tasty, it's got to be like texturally appealing for the animal, visually appealing for the animal, but it also has to meet some kind of really specific nutritional requirements. And how do you determine kind of that, yeah, sea kelp is a thing you want to use? Like, where do you get that information? How do you like stay up on like the latest trends in kind of these types of, cereals?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say between the three of us and the rest of the team, we've got a good understanding of what's available out there, what's worked practically for us in the past. And so we put together the various blends and, make sure that we produce a complete feed for every animal. And of course, as you were saying, it has to be guaranteed and tested and this kind of thing. So we do all of that to make sure that the animals get the appropriate nutrition. And but really, I mean, the I think he also says something really important there, Aaron, too. He talked about something which is visually appealing, because when people think of feed for animals, livestock, pets, you tend to think of kind of gray, lifeless pellets, you know?
Yeah.
And we don't do that. We don't actually pelletize. Our customers like to see what's inside the feed. And so you can see the real grains and so forth. With a pellet, you know, you've often got fillers and middlings and all sorts of things in there to bulk out the feed. And so in our case, we approach it with a very different way. It's not least cost formulated. It is a very healthful product for the animals, and generally they really enjoy it.
So one of the charts that I thought was super interesting, and folks, if you're out there listening, you can find more about New Country Organics. It's just newcountryorganics.com. Lots of great information on the site. You can order directly from the site if you've been like looking for that right kind of resource for your budding backyard chicken flock, or just kind of some basic information on how to get started and what to think about. But you guys had a chart on there doing a comparative a comparison of GMO versus organic versus there was like one other tier, and you kind of you know, it's like one of those things where you're like, does it have this? Check yes or no. Does it have this? Check. And some of the things on there I was not familiar with, and I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about them. So one of the checkpoints was that the grains were free of human sewage or sludge. And I was like, that's a thing I need to worry about?
Well, yeah, that is a thing you probably should be concerned about. In conventional farming, that practice is permitted. And it's actually, for conventional farmers, it's a very inexpensive way of fertilizing their fields. Now, when you see a product that says non-GMO, what that means is that the seed has not been genetically modified. But all the other aspects of conventional farming can still apply to that product. And
right.
So it is true that that product could have had that application. So we really believe in the organic standard and everything that comes with that. So, you know, in the organic standard, you can't have the chemical and synthetic pesticides and herbicides, fertilizers, and the GMOs, of course, you know, various things. But I think as well what's really important there is the organic farmer is supposed to take care of the soil, nurture the soil, and enrich the soil. And more and more, I think we're discovering that with conventional farming, the soil is being depleted. The topsoil is physically being depleted, and the richness of the soil is less than it was. And we're relying more and more on the chemicals to grow the food.
Well, I think it's too, it's like when you're eating like a lovely chicken dinner, you're not often thinking about that having a direct impact on soil health in some other part of the country. I wanted to ask you about a couple of other things on that checklist, just because I realized, you know, there was a, you know, you're talking about chemical or synthetic pesticides, herbicides, fungicides. What is the difference between a chemical and a synthetic? If you know, I'm like, actually, I don't really know what that means.
Yeah, so I think here we're talking about whether it's artificially formulated,
mm-hmm.
You know, whether perhaps it's a chemical which may be
naturally
applied.
Occurring.
Yeah, but you know, we could so off the top of my head, I can't go into more detail than that, than those kinds of things. But we could absolutely have another conversation about that in terms of the organic standard and the detail of it behind it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of what I assumed, that it's like a chemical. It's a chemical and a synthetic. But I wonder what that actually like looks like in practice. Definitely, probably, I think a conversation for another time. Well, the last kind of like thing I'm going to grill you on here is radiation treatments. I'm wondering, why is that happening to feed? What does it do? And then, you know, why do you not need to do it for the feed and the feed mixes that you're producing?
Yeah, so with this, you're really talking about preserving and killing, you know, microbes and this kind of thing. And So it's a way of preserving the longevity of the food conventionally. And with organic, you really cannot do that. So that, you know, one of the reasons organic products don't last as long as, say, conventional products. You know, if you buy conventional loaf, it can sit in your fridge for a long time. Organic foods are natural foods. These are real foods. And so they will tend to go off a lot faster.
So I think, to me, I feel like it would be helpful to think of like radiation treatment kind of like similar to like pasteurizing something. So you're kind of like put it's undergoing some type of a treatment that's going to kill off certain things, but it's like kind of a blunt instrument in that it kills things that could be potentially like harmful, degrading, but also kills kind of like the good stuff. So it's like not a very like precise tool with regards to preserving the best parts of the product.
Yes, I would agree with that. Definitely a blunt instrument. So.
All right, cool. All right, well, I'm going to let you take just a quick breath after asking you what I feel like are probably the harder questions that I have on the deck. We're going to have a short station break to hear from our wonderful supporters. You, of course, are listening to the Farm Report. Folks, stay tuned in. We will be right back.
And this one's called Torchlight by RecTech. We'll be right back.
Log on to escapemaker.com for more ideas on local weekend getaways and day trips to orchards, farms, wineries, breweries, and more. Or come by Escapemaker's Blue Tent in Grow NYC's Green Markets and pick up a guide to local agritourism escapes to the Green Market's own farmers and producers. Have you listened to On the Road with Beer Sessions Radio? Escapemaker has teamed up with Heritage Radio to design a vacation package that provides a first-hand experience of the local flavors from some of New York's best craft beverage producers. Listen in and book your trip at escapemaker.com/heritageradio. No car, no problem. Escape Maker features plenty of ideas for car-free getaways, including discounts via Amtrak. Get out of the city and explore, while also supporting your local farmers. Log on to escapemaker.com now to get inspired and make your escape through the net.
All right. We are back. You, of course, are listening to the Farm Report. We are on the line with Jim Campbell of New Country Organics talking about organic feed supply. So now that we're out of the hot seat, let's move into some new territory. You said that you were calling from your new spot down in Lubbock, Texas. So you guys have recently purchased an old grain mill that you're working on refurbishing and putting back into production. How do you get from Virginia to Texas?
We absolutely are in the middle of that project now here in Lubbock. And effectively, as I mentioned, we actually distribute up and down the East Coast. And so really by adding the site in Lubbock, it's given us the ability to distribute the product into the Southwest. And so we can pick the location with a view to the ability to do that, and also the fact that there was an old mill available there from which we could begin to make the feed locally. You know, feed is really expensive to ship. And so by doing that, we're hoping to make it much more affordable and accessible to many more people. And so that's really why Lubbock caught our interest. And then when we came here, we saw that it's actually a fantastic location from the perspective of local organic supply. Mm-hmm. And the railway network and the road network and that kind of thing. It's a fantastic city and people have been very friendly and welcoming to us. So all of that, that made sense. And you know, the other thing, too, I'll mention as well about refurbishing the old site, it's kind of how we've done things so far, and we see this as part of our identity. So in Virginia, We're actually in the site of an old apple cider vinegar works. It's almost a 100-year-old site, and we bought it, and we've been doing it up. It's in right next to a residential community, and really nothing was happening there previously. We think that it's important to restore some of these old sites and to give them a new utility, you know, in the new century. And so down in Lubbock, we've bought really an iconic mill that goes back to 1924.
Wow.
The equipment's not that old, thankfully, but the actual, you know, the site, it goes back that far, and there are some old buildings on it. And for people locally, it's a bit of a landmark. And so we think that, you know, part of the recycle, reuse equation is part of the sustainability aspect.
That makes sense. One of the things I feel like I hear it when people are talking about organic feed in particular is, you know, for farmers, it's tough because organic feed is more expensive. There's less of it kind of produced in the U.S., and that also, if you're an if you're looking to buy organic feed for livestock, that you're kind of competing with producers who are going to decide to grow. If they're going to decide to grow, they might choose to grow grain for human consumption to sell to make, you know, like organic Doritos and Oreos. And I'm wondering if you have any sense of like the a little bit more nuance to kind of that question. I feel like it's a thing that people have said to me in the past, and I'm like, I don't really know what the real deal there is. When you're thinking from like the production supply chain, like how a producer kind of decides what's going to be the right type of grain to grow once they've kind of made this decision that they're going to produce organic grain.
I see. Well, I would say that really it's really like conventional in the sense that once you decide you're going to go organic, it's a bit really important to have an eye to your market, mm-hmm. and you know, who will buy that grain and what kind of pricing you might get for it. Organic grains are more expensive than conventional grains for sure, and the prices go up and down depending on supply and demand. In the U.S., it's a little bit unfortunate that most of the organic producers of foods and feeds import organic grains, while the U.S. actually exports conventional grains because there's a huge shortage of organic grains in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But so as an example, you know, down here in Texas, we've had lots of farmers come in and say, gosh, you know, I'm trying to decide what to plant for next year. What kind of grains might you be interested in and what quantity?
Right.
And once we give them that information, you can decide what to plant. And I think that if you're planning to convert from conventional to organic, you know, it's important to have a view to, you know, what kind of market's there for the grain you want to do, how it fits in with your other plans, rotations, and so forth.
Right. And then just like the time factor, if you're making a transition from a conventional operation to an organic operation, you have to like find someone who wants to like be, you know, stick with you as you're like making that transfer. Well, I'm wondering, and like no big deal if this is kind of not in your kind of spectrum of expertise, but obviously one of the things we've been talking about at the network more generally, but also on this show, is what the kind of new administration may or may not mean for agriculture. And, you know, I feel like Trump has taken positions in particular looking at, you know, kind of trade issues, import-export issues. Is that something you've been following? And do you have a sense of like what that might mean for new country organics? Are you feeling optimistic, pessimistic? Like, what's your general sense?
Yeah, we as a company, you know, we're not really active politically, I would say. So, you know, the people in the company, of course, have strong opinions on all sides. But the one thing as a company that we've commented on has been TPP. And
I was wondering about that.
You know, and often we felt that some of these trade deals have become a way for big, very big business to export their way of thinking about the world in terms of conventional farming and what that means, and genetic modification of crops, and kind of exporting that to other parts of the world. And so we've actually been quite, I would say, happy that the TPP seems to be on the back burner, I think, mm-hmm. at best.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. It was interesting. We did a show a couple of weeks ago prior to the election, kind of doing a little bit of a deep dive, looking at the focus areas for each, you know, at that time, potential administration and what that was going to mean for agriculture. But I think it'll be really interesting to see, you know, what that point of view, how that trickles down into what type of food we're eating, where it's grown, how much it costs. Again, all of those like voting decisions, they end up impacting so much. And it can be kind of tricky with the food supply stuff, because I think on one hand you're looking at like really small, like local things, but most of the food people are consuming is part of like a very big and complex system. It's hard to kind of step outside of that. So it's interesting that like, I feel like the future seems like potentially like bright for New Country Organics. Like as folks get fed up, like one of the options is to kind of try to opt out of that supply chain and by producing their own food. I feel like the alternative is to like look at influencing, and you're already seeing that. I don't know how much like kind of general like industry poultry news that you follow, but I was just getting like a small, like a poultry, we're on all these kind of like listservs for kind of news in the poultry industry. And there was this big report that came out in a very public way that was essentially like the biggest threat to the chicken industry heading into 2017 is the rise of pasture-raised poultry and what it's going to do to demolish the chicken industry. And I was just like, what a crazy thing to say.
Yeah, well, I would tend to agree with that. I think that you know, people have been keeping chickens in their backyards, so to speak, for thousands and thousands of years. And this business is an ancient business, and these practices predate, you know, the concentrated animal feeding operations. And I think that, that many people in those operations, you know, get concerned about backyard flocks and this kind of thing. But we absolutely think that it's a very positive development for the society as a whole, for people to grow their own food and to control the quality of that. It's great education for children. It's, I mean, chickens are fantastic beasts. Not only do they eat insects, you know, they give you wonderful, you know, manure that you can actually put into your compost pile and this kind of thing. They can actually turn over soil for you. I mean, many of our customers actually use their chickens in conjunction with an organic garden. So they'll grow vegetables in an area. And it's, you know, a huge fenced in area, perhaps, and the chickens are in one side, and then they flip-flop year in, year out, season in, season out, in order to make sure the earth is fertilized. And I think it's a really good way of doing things. So we hear stories like that all the time.
So you're feeling like the future is looking bright?
Well, yeah,
for New Country Organics, not just all of the things, but like for your business specifically.
Yeah, I think that if you look at the passion for and interest in organic, certainly organic human food, it's still a very much a growing part of the U.S. Food market. People are more and more interested in this. And I think that as that happens for our company, there's an opportunity as well to provide people with organic food for their animals. And in fact, I would say that I think that we're probably at the beginning of a bit of a revolution on that. And that kind of the old-fashioned way of doing it, I think, is less and less attractive to many modern consumers.
Well, we will find out, won't we? Jim, thank you. Thank you so much. It's been great to get a little peek into what you guys have going on. Folks, once again, it is New Country Organics. You can find out more by visiting newcountryorganics.com. I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of The Farm Report. Like I said, all 34 of our weekly programs on the Heritage Radio Network are available for free. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us anywhere you get your great podcasts. We got some new shows in the mix this fall that I would recommend checking out for Farm Report listeners. One is Magnif Eco, a new show hosted by Kate Black that's looking at environmental impact and sustainability in the fashion and beauty industry. And then for those of you who are looking to expand your wine knowledge, check out The Grape Nation. It's a great show that is kind of a primer, an intro to folks who want to learn a little bit more about wine. I think wine, fashion, two amazing agricultural products, a great way to explore them is by listening to more of our great shows. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned in.
for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.